Hello, friends. Welcome to Healing the Divide. I am your host, Scott Feinberg, and today I am joined by professional athlete turned entrepreneur, Drew Thompson. Drew will be the first to admit that he's always found himself in situations he had no business being in. Selected in the second round of the Major League Baseball draft at just 18 years old, and becoming a business owner in his hometown with no business degree or college education are just two examples Drew believes would never be possible without manifestation, positive visualization, dedication, discipline, pure intention, and the support from others. Following a career plagued with injuries and adversity, he fell into a depression which would birth not only the darkest days of his life, but also what would become the beginning of a spiritual awakening. After years of suffering from both physical and mental injury and ailment, he would eventually learn that truly, without the darkness, there is no light. An advocate of self-education and self-exploration, Drew credits mindfulness, meditation, and psychedelics as key factors in rewiring his mind, transporting him to what he claims to be the healthiest mental state he has experienced to date, an unconditional sense of sustained happiness that he hopes everybody can find and experience. Drew, thank you for being with me today, brother.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. Always had much love, respect, and appreciation for you. So to be able to have this conversation feels great.
It's mutual, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to extend the conversations that you and I sometimes have about the journey of life and into this format so that we can widen the conversation. And really the way I'm imagining this podcast flowing today is just, you know, inviting folks that are listening to be part of this conversation. Two guys that are working on themselves and trying to offer something to their community and what that looks like on the outside, but also what that looks like on the inside. What's the internal dimensions of entrepreneurship, of navigating adversity, of shaking off our family of origin conditioning and claiming our own narrative and our own path. And I'm really looking forward to this. So I want to just, if you're open to sharing a little bit about your story to provide some context to the conversation, what was it like for you as a kid growing up? What were the ideals that were instilled, the dreams, visions, hopes, plans that you thought were going to be one expression? And just kind of give us a little background story, if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So all those things definitely started at a very early age and pretty heavily before I even really had an opportunity to feel things out for myself, to even kind of reconsider what it was that I ever wanted to accomplish. 1986 was not only the year that I was born, but it was also my father Robbie's rookie season in the big leagues. He played for the San Francisco Giants for 10 years. He was a starting second baseman. He was an all-star, gold glover, silver slugger. Just had a hell of a career for himself. And if I back up even further, he, in a sense, kind of comes from nothing. He was always undersized. No one expected him to have the career that he had. So I took these things on, again, before I even realized. And it just kind of really opened my eyes and my mind to what truly is possible at a very young age. Not only that, but more specifically, as I grew up, I saw like everything about me and him, if I'm wording that correctly, and there were so many similarities, and my passions seemed to be his passions. My strengths seemed to be his strengths. He was my role model. He was my idol. He was my, you know, everything. I looked up to that man from literally as long as I can remember. And as early as I was able to, I would go to the ballpark with him because growing up, we were fortunate enough to bounce back and forth between Jupiter, Florida, obviously Paradise, and San Francisco, obviously another cool place, you know, within the country. And so that there alone was like, as soon as I was old enough to truly appreciate, like, wow, this man has provided our family to be able to live in two of the most beautiful areas in the country, you know? Obviously, I'm a bit biased, but, you know, so that is just one example of what I saw he was able to provide from truly just working hard. You know, that man worked harder than anyone I can remember. That was one of the first things that I truly like pulled from him. But from there, it was just the coolest childhood, such an amazing upbringing. Like I said, I was going to the ballpark with him from the time I could hardly even put my shoes on. I'd ride with him early in the morning, go to Candlestick Park, grow up around guys like Barry Bonds, Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Dusty Baker, you know, all these baseball legends, Will Clark. And it was almost as if I was one of the guys, you know, from, again, as long as I can remember. And then as soon as I was able, I was out there taking ground balls with them, taking batting practice with them, you know, as if I was one of them. And they treated me like I was, you know, obviously there was a separation there. They knew I was just a little kid, but they showed me, you know, a mutual respect. And it wasn't like I was kind of getting in their way. You know, I was helping out in a sense and part of the pregame routines. And then I was a bat boy sitting in the dugout during the game. So it was all I knew. It was my passion. It was my strength. Again, it was all I truly knew. It was all I ever wanted, was to do exactly what that man was doing. And I'd say, you know, with good reason, like I said, it was such a rare upbringing, rare childhood. He was able to provide so many things and opportunities for our family just from playing, you know, a game and being very good at it very consistently. So from there, again, my childhood, obviously, I enjoyed life and I had plenty of friends and we got to travel and I did things other than baseball, you know, obviously. But at the same time, like, again, with that discipline, for as long as I can remember, damn near every decision that I ever made was based around like, okay, I'd like to see this happen, but how will this affect my long-term goal? You know, so in a sense, every decision I ever made had that in the back of my mind, you know? So pros and cons to it. I think that it definitely led to a lot of the quote unquote success that I have seen in my life and being able to accomplish certain things that I've set out to do. But at the same time, now that I'm getting older and doing, you know, the inner work and it, connecting the dots with some of these things that I ended up struggling with internally, it did kind of suck a bit of the joy and whatnot from my childhood. And even as I age, you know, I still catch myself. Luckily, I'm more mindful of it. I'm able to kind of witness it and not in a judgmental state, but kind of separate, you know, my thoughts and whatnot from who and what I am, which has been a huge difference maker for me. But back to my story as far as the upbringing from there, as I mentioned, every decision I made was to make this happen. Fortunately enough, I found myself as a senior in high school. If I back up a little bit, my junior year, my summer going into my senior year was when I really started to perform. I really was on scouts' radars. I was already committed and signed to play at the University of Florida, which was one of the top tier programs in the nation. That's where my dad went. You know, that's the only school I wanted to go to. So I started to like not literally check these boxes off, but internally it was like these things that I had always set out to accomplish were falling into place. These things that I had before, you know, manifestation and visualization and whatnot were like mainstream. As a child, I would kind of obsess over these things to where I was seeing myself in these roles and in this situation and in the uniform, but not as a little kid, you know, like in a uniform of my own and having not Thompson 6, because that's what my dad wore, but Thompson and hopefully 6, because that was his number. That's what I wanted to be, but of my own, you know. So my senior year came, And suddenly, not only had I already committed to college, but all these pro scouts started to show up. And that was one of the things. My dad was super old school, which again, worked in my favor with certain things in life, but also ended up kind of being a bit detrimental with others, pros and cons to everything, right? So my point being is that he always kind of stated that you don't need to, there's showcases, right, where you kind of pay X amount of dollars to play in front of these scouts at tournaments. Mm-hmm. And you kind of pay to get looks. But his thing was, he didn't allow me to do the showcases. If you have the ability, if you can play, they'll come and find you, right? So I wasn't a really highly touted guy, big name, you know, going into my senior year. But then I kept performing, kept playing. And before I knew it, man, like, I get the chills thinking about it because it was literally a dream come true. But every single professional team had scouts there watching me pregame, batting practice, during the game, whether we were at home or on the road. And it was every game. And it was wild, man. Like, again, a literal dream come true. At the same time, I loved it. I enjoyed it. But part of me truly never, like, was in that moment, really appreciated that moment, enjoyed what was going on, slowed things down, and, like, took that breath and was like, all right, man, you haven't made it, but you're fucking doing it, you know? So I apologize, but you're doing it.
Yeah.
That was another thing as I got older and started to do the inner work that I definitely have struggled with as a kid. And even still, you know, it's a battle as far as being in the present moment, enjoying and appreciating what it is that we have going on, whether it is a dream come true or if it's the darkest days of our lives. Like, this moment is literally all that matters. This moment is all that we have, you know? But in my mind, anyways, back to that, I was too worried about, okay, I have all these scouts here. If I was 3 for 4, you know, I got 3 hits, but I got out once. In my mind, I was like, damn, I should have got that 4th hit. You know, like, just always too hard on myself, always trying to do too much in a sense, because it was kind of hardwired in me. Didn't realize it at the time. Anyways, if we fast forward, I ended up getting drafted in the 2nd round, as you mentioned, by the Minnesota Twins. That whole process, dealing with the scouts, having them come and figure out what my makeup was. Again, I wouldn't have gotten taken where I did that early in the draft if I was not making the right decisions right off the baseball field. If I was kind of a kid getting in trouble, right? Or not focusing on what he can do to kind of better himself and better the people around him. So my makeup is what they call it. That was one of the things that really helped me go as early as I did and for the Twins to invest the amount of money that they did at 18 years old, you know? So I get drafted, I sign again, another check off the box. But, in my mind, it was like, okay, now the work really starts. Meanwhile, right. I literally have worked 18 years of my life, but as long as I can literally remember to make this happen, you know? So in my mind, I put a lot of pressure on myself because now there's all these individuals that invested in me, saw something in me, so I need to live up to this hype in a sense. If I fast forward even more and cut out the details, basically everything that I had ever worked for was falling into place. All my dreams were coming true. I signed, I started a professional career of my own with an organization that my dad had no affiliation with, you know, so just starting this career of my own. Then suddenly my rookie year went well. I performed, Gulf Coast League. I was one of the top prospects at the end of the year. The next season starts, I advance, to the Midwest League. And they were projecting me at the time to make it to the big leagues by the time I was 21. Obviously, that sounds great. Let's go. That's exactly what I want. But at the same time, it's like, okay, being a kid, being a bit of an ignorant kid who hasn't dealt with much adversity to this point, it's like, okay, again, this is all that matters, right? Big leagues by 21. Nothing else matters. I'm going to do anything I can to make it happen. My second year in, I perform in again. Now I'm 19 years old. I make the All-Star team. One of the top prospects yet again in the league. my back starts bothering me. And rather than listening to my body, which has been one of the biggest lessons I've learned in this lifetime, in this body, is that I could have easily shut it down, got the medical advice that I needed. If I needed to take some time off, rehabbed, gotten back to the strength that I needed to be at to perform every day. Because professionally, you're playing games every single night. And if you're playing, you're out there in the lineup every single night. So basically, long story longer, I had this back injury. Should have listened to my body, decided not to because I didn't want to set back. I had that idea of 21 big leagues in my mind. So what ended up happening is for 3 months, I played through the pain. For 3 months, I was going to the ballpark hours before anyone else got there to get with the trainer just to be able to like loosen up my body to be able to get that out and perform that night for my, not even like thrive, but just for my body to allow me to be out there and perform and play, right? Mm-hmm. My leg was shaking. I like just all these ailments that were going on internally that I just completely ignored because I didn't want to set back. And then finally what happened is one day we had an off day. I went fishing with some of my teammates. The next day, my alarm goes off. I go to get up, start my routine so that I can get into the ballpark for another night. And I couldn't get out of bed. My left leg was shot. So finally I like kind of lay around. I eventually get it to loosen up and I couldn't really put much weight on it. I had my buddy drive me to the ballpark, see the trainer. They see what's going on and they're like, all right, we finally got to, you know, get you in there and see what it is that's going on. From there, I had 2 stress fractures, a bulging disc and spondylolisthesis. So in a sense, I literally like broke my back and it was all my low back. Spondylolisthesis is not like scoliosis to where your spine is kind of crooked in a sense, but front to back, your discs slip off one another. So everything that runs, all the nerves and whatnot that are running through your spinal cord, if you can imagine when they slip, they pinch everything. And that's why it was affecting my leg. And then some days it would affect my upper body. You know, it was just really throwing things off. So from there, basically I could have a spinal fusion, fuse my spine together, go through my stomach, put a piece of plastic through the back, would be 2 large bars, 4 screws holding things in place. 19 years old, didn't even think twice about it. So the other thing was a hard cast. I was basically in a body cast, hard piece of plastic, keep everything together for like 3 months. Then from there, rehab. Rehabbed for quite some time. Saw no improvement, no benefits. Finally, I told the organization, Minnesota Twins, that I was going to go home and start handling this on my own. Because the things that we were doing there just weren't working and they weren't really open to trying anything new, you know? So it was just the same thing over and over, and which leads to improvement and success, depending on what it is that you're talking about. But with this, there was no improvement. So I came home and that's when I kind of got into some of these other things like yoga at Kula, probably before you even knew who I was or what I was doing there, just quietly going there with my mom, you know, trying to feel out some new things, get into my body, start listening to my body, Pilates, meditation as well, just all these different things, spiritual healing. I've done literally everything you can imagine except for that spinal fusion for 5 years. So I spent 6 years trying to get healthy, tons of ups and downs. I would feel better, start performing, start thriving. The organization was back on me at that point. I got into some big league spring training games, performed a bit. And it was just, like I said, a roller coaster up and down. If it wasn't my back that started bothering me again, then it was pulling my hamstrings or having surgery on my foot or arm issues. You know, it was just literally always something. And I learned more than I ever could throughout that process. All those things have led me to where I'm at today. That adversity had, I don't want to say helped me, but kind of primed me for these things that would happen in my future now in the business world or in personal life, you know? So my point being is that I truly believe and feel confident sitting here that without those lessons learned, without that adversity, I wouldn't be able to see like the true beauty in life and what truly matters. I wouldn't possibly have been set on kind of the spiritual path. You know, who knows what would have happened. But at the end of the day, as I sit here speaking with you, I'm very happy that things ended up the way that they did. I struggled with it for so long. Even the fact that I can sit here and speak, like, I was going to make a joke earlier about how hopefully I could talk about this without getting emotional, you know, like,
yeah.
But finally, like, I'm able to just see the positives in it, the beauty of it, and not be attached to it and still have, like, that inner trauma, you know, that I was still holding on to and still kind of feeling guilty or responsible about, or what if, you know, kind of living in the past. And again, that attachment. So that's kind of the gist of it, kind of my upbringing and what my passions were that kind of led me to this point. I realized that was a very lengthy answer to your question.
No, man.
But here we are.
Yeah, here we are in this moment that you said, you know, we have this one right now. And it's a blessing to get to share it with you. And thank you. Yeah, if truly from my heart, thank you for sharing your story. It's a powerful story and it needs to be told. And I think so many of us can relate to that. Maybe not growing up with, you know, the baseball legends, you know, et cetera, but growing up with that dream, that plan, that vision, we can become, you know, so single track focused on that's the thing and that's what my path is. And it's like this sort of determined vision and version of what life is going to look like. And then life has other plans for us. And what do we do with that? And I'm always inspired by what you've done with that. But before we go into that piece, I think just looking at that relationship that you had and have with your dad, you know, like that's just to be like a little boy. And, you know, I just feel like as guys sometimes we're like, we don't open up, we're not vulnerable. We mask it. We put on that front. And it's like, it's all good. And we bury it. And it's like, you know, that to be able to hear your story and to feel your heart, I could feel myself holding back tears. Like that was emotional to take in. And like, I mean, imagine like the grandiosity of like for many of us, it's like dad is our hero, but in your sense, like dad's everyone's hero, but he's your dad and you're out there candlestick in the morning. I mean, it's so extreme, that version of what that father son relationship that's so special is. And it can also be, you know, filled with so much wounding and not necessarily from the place of like, I'm trying to hurt you, but sometimes it's like, you know, meaning well, and yet it, I don't know, man, in my version of that, it's like, you know, my dad has been a great dad, like such an unbelievable human being to me to this day. And sometimes in his yearning to like that positive visualization and you can achieve and all of it, but being so young and hearing those teachings, it's like, it can put so much pressure on us. And I know I paid it forward. Like, you know, I went to University of Florida as well. And when my son was in middle school, you know, he was in eighth grade. He's like, I want to go there too. And I could see that feeling, you know, and it's like, okay, so like, we're getting ready to go into high school after the summer. Like, you know, what's the plan? How are we going to get there? What are the habits that we need to instill? And, you know, all of it, like what kind of classes, what's the roadmap to get there? And I sat with him and like had him write it all down on a piece of paper. And it's like the double-edged sword, or, you know, of it all is, he ended up getting into University of Florida. He's there now. And he shared with me right before he went. It was so it was hard to hear this, man. This is emotional for me, but like that piece of paper, like, I never knew where it went. Evidently, it ended up in a drawer in the kitchen where all, like, the, like, pens and pencils and scissors, like, that little, like, utility drawer, you know, that we all have. And it's like, but he would see it every time he opened the drawer, you know, in 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, what, that going into the SATs, am I going to get in? The pressure that I unconsciously paid forward and what that mounted on him. It's like, on one hand, it's like, as fathers, like, we want to, like, extend this, like, belief and empowerment. But what that does to a person that doesn't have the ability to do something with it quite yet, it's like we get attached to this future that we're just not in yet. And it's like we make a self out of that. And he shared, I'm so grateful he had the courage to share with me, like, that was hard for him retrospectively. You know, and I went home and I tore up the paper and I threw it in the garbage and they went and found it. And it's like, you know, I love you just for being you. And it, you know, it's that father-son journey is really something. But on top of that, you know, a piece of what you shared, well, actually, I'll pause for a second. Is there anything that you want to add into that, like, relationship with your dad? And, like, how did that evolve? And where is it now? I feel like, especially for the guys that are listening, like, understanding, like, really pausing and being present with the father-son dynamic is, it's where so much gets modeled for us. And the stories, the behaviors, the patterns that we inherit, the idea of what a successful life is that we inherit. And it's like, am I fulfilling my own story or am I, like, writing someone else's? But what if I want it too? It's so complex.
Yeah, exactly. I can relate to a lot of things that you're speaking on. And I think the most powerful thing, and it, like, literally gives me chills just hearing you say it, is the fact that you tore up that piece of paper and you let I know, you know, that no matter what, I love you just the same. Mm-hmm. That is one thing that wasn't necessarily there. Didn't truly, like, realize that or feel that until my baseball career came to an end, until I did decide to retire, because I wasn't going to continue brutalizing my body and causing permanent nerve damage, you know? So I just want to commend you for that. And I'm sure you realize how powerful it is, but truly, like, from the bottom of my heart, how powerful that truly is, that simple act. Because that is something, you know, that I definitely struggled with. To touch more specifically on kind of our bond, our relationship, my father and I growing up, was incredible. Like, probably not much like it. But at the same time, it was very, and I don't want to speak negatively about the man, especially since he's not here to defend himself, but what ended up being very conditional, and off the field, aside from baseball, that was basically my siblings and I all together as a whole could do very little right, and could do very little to kind of live up to his expectations and to please him and to feel that love, unconditional love, you know, just hurts to say, but it wasn't really there. And then, as I mentioned, when I did retire, and when I retired, I had a bitter taste in my mouth about the game because it wasn't on my own terms, right? Like, it was kind of rugged from underneath my feet overnight, in a sense. Overnight being 6 years of rehab, but that injury just kind of wiped everything from me. So after that, I didn't want anything to do with the game of baseball. I couldn't, you know, I literally wasn't prepared internally to do. I couldn't watch it. All these guys that I played with and against making it, having careers of X amount of years that were not very talented, you know, like, so it's tough to accept. But my point being is that once I kind of completely walked away from the game, whether it was playing it or appreciating it, watching it, any of it, our relationship kind of took this merge and we kind of went separate ways in a sense. And then we didn't have a common bond of any sort at that point. As I mentioned, he's super old school, and aside from baseball, it kind of hurts to say, but he likes to fish, but has never really had any other thing he's been passionate about, has never truly done the inner work, not even for a day. So we didn't have too much to kind of like, nothing was kind of jiving there, you know, and then it was a lot of kind of just butting heads on things. And then we were both kind of in a dark place at that point. And it just, for years, it was a struggle, truthfully. And we didn't speak much. We didn't see each other much, even living down the street from one another, you know? And again, it just kind of tears me up inside talking about it. But it's something that I've been working on, and I've been dealing with, and I've been connecting the dots, making sense of it. And I don't judge him for it. I don't knock him for it. You know, I don't have any resentment towards the man. And now we're improving, you know, like we're able to go grab lunch and have conversations and things like that and see each other for who we are, you know, and look past the years of a bit of conflict in a sense and friction. So it's a work in progress, you know, as is everything. But to answer your question, it was great, then it was real bad, and now it's getting better. And that's just kind of life in general, you know, the ups and downs. But I do, again, I know that I brought it up, but I'm still just kind of getting the chills thinking about it, just the way that you handle that situation and the relationship that you have with Kai. I just want to commend you for being such a positive father, role model, you know, all the above. So respect to you.
Appreciate you, bro. Like, thank you for saying that. And yeah, it's hard sometimes when we feel like maybe we've hurt the people that we care about the most. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned, one of the things I've learned on this journey is that that's inevitable, that like we're like, as humans, we're you know, like we do have this capacity for repair, and that we can circle back, and it's never too late to have that conversation, even when like the person's not alive anymore. Like if we can really get to that soul level, which is one of the things I want to dive into with you, there's this availability to heal, you know, those relationships and those relational wounds. And I wanted to dive into this like the 6 year rehab space. And it's almost this like hero's journey, you know, like inside of that. And it's funny, there's a saying in one of the Native American traditions, it's called the spirit canoe. And I really love it. I'm like researching a little and getting curious with it. And that idea of like, I'm like, man, I think I want to write a book called The Spirit Canoe. And it's like, what's the thing that takes us from like what we thought life was, like you said, who we think we are and what we think we are, like even in the objective sense. And then like there's some intelligence in this universe. And I wonder, like, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but it's like, I wonder like how much is like fate, how much is coincidence? Is it circumstance? Is it synchronicity? Like what, like consciousness obviously is emerging, you know, and like, what is consciousness, and is there a bigger consciousness, and is it like some like godlike consciousness? Is it a individuated soul, higher self consciousness that's like maybe the design for the soul growth this time was to like have this sort of pattern disruption experience that's like big enough to shake us out of this cloak of identity that we think we are, so that we could like get in the spirit canoe and like row ourselves for 6 years? And the canoe is on the water. There's some, you know, current as well that we're doing it with. But it seems like that 6 years is what redirected you to maybe a new definition of what success is. So I wondered if you could, like, if we could zoom into that window, and especially I'd like to add to this question, for people that are listening right now that are in their version of that, you know, like, I thought it was going to go this way and I'm grieving the loss of what I thought I had and how painful that is, but what a blessing it could be. But when we give back somebody else's version of success, of what a fulfilling life is, and we get to become the author and authority of our own. So what was that like for you, and maybe slower motion of like, the struggle, and then like, what were those alchemical inflection points that felt like this is a pieces of you coming back to you?
Yeah, I love that. As far as the canoe, I couldn't agree more, because before I kind of jump into those 6 years, as far as consciousness and having this higher power kind of guiding things in a sense for what is meant to be truly learned or taken from the experience or experiences. I think that although during those 6 years I did learn a lot, I didn't truly learn what the point was, because the reason I say that is I still, even once I jumped into the business career, I was still faced with some of these repetitive patterns. And now I'm to the point where it's like, okay, it's all making sense. I'm able to connect these dots. I'm able to feel like that quote unquote true success finally. But those 6 years, man, it's hard to put into words. Started off not so terrible, you know, like I knew that I had a setback, but I knew that I had it in me to get through it. So I did exactly what the doctors had told me. I did the physical therapy. As I mentioned, I went home because I wasn't seeing progress. I started to see progress. I got back on track. And then again, it was up and down. But to basically like sum things up, one, in the back of my mind, even my trainers throughout the years with different organizations, because I spent some time with the Chicago White Sox as well, they would even ask me, they're like, dude, what are you doing here? Like, what, how and why are you still putting your body and your mind and everything through this on a daily basis? Like, and again, the main thing that truly kept me like pushing through it all was just that feeling of one day being able to provide for my family that I didn't even clearly have, but still don't have. But just this thought again of like who or what we're meant to be was this man that is able to provide anything in a practical sense, you know, being able to take trips and travel and experience different cultures and places and make my kids feel comfortable, you know, like that was it. That's exactly what what's the definition of the saying, or the definition of insanity is doing the same thing every day and not seeing a difference. You know, I was driving myself insane. Doing the same thing, the same routine every single day, whether it was during season or off season, to just allow myself to allow my body the ability to play a child's game, right? Like baseball is a child's game. When you really peel back the layers, it's a business. When it becomes professional, it's a child's game. And it's a bunch of men playing a child's game, getting paid way too much money to play a child's game. These things I didn't realize at the time, you know, like that wasn't even a thought in my mind. In my mind, it was, okay, I'm dealt with a bit of adversity. I have to, I apologize, I don't know how else to say it, but eat a bit of shit for a while to get to this end goal. And I was willing to do so. So I kept at it and I kept at it and I kept at it. I would perform and I'd be back on the disabled list, back in the training room, Never even really left the training room because unable to perform and get out there. Like I said, every day I'd have to go there early. Every night I'd have to stay late, you know. But it was part of it in my eyes, you know. It was going to be my story and my path, but I'm still going to make it happen, you know. And then back to kind of what you were saying as far as that higher power having a much better idea of truly what this path is and will be, had other plans. And that's why I believe my leg ended up shaking uncontrollably for a number of days, literally days straight. My leg was just shaking. So that's when I was with the White Sox. At the end of those 6 years, they're like, dude, we can't even continue to allow yourself to do this. You know, like, you have to go see the doctor. And they basically gave me that same ultimatum of fuse your spine together, continue playing through the pain and cause permanent nerve damage. They said I'd have to walk with a cane by the time I was like in my low 30s. I'm in my upper 30s now. No cane, thankfully. But in my mind, I was like, okay, I don't want to do that. I want to eventually have kids. I want to be able to pick up my kids and live a normal life, you know? So the third option was to walk away from the game. And spent a little bit of time thinking about it. But at the end of the day, you know, like, it was kind of a no-brainer for me between the three options. And that's when I was, again, forced. Clearly, I wasn't listening to these things that were happening around me or what someone or something was trying to guide me, you know, in potentially another direction. So my body literally shut down to where I had no other option. I was forced to now make this decision. Okay, this game was great to your father. This game was great to your family. This game has been terrible to you. Go do something else. You know, like, stop doing this to yourself. Not just physically. I was in so much pain every day, all day, and it would put me in a mood that I would set aside, you know, but more so mentally and like what it was doing to my mind and my mental health was not there. As you mentioned, I was in a depression in the darkest days of my life. Never thought I'd get out of those dark days. I had my jaw wired shut for a while in the middle of all that. Couldn't eat, couldn't, you know, do all these things. And it was just like, and that's really when I got deep into meditation, started to kind of connect these dots. But I still didn't listen.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
I want to ask a specific question right at that this little pivot point right here when, you know, pushing through this idea of like, I'm just going to push through and like at any cost, no matter what, at all odds. And you had referenced earlier that you like learned to be hard on yourself and how that internal voice, you know, maybe it was your dad's voice that became your own. And it's like, we walk around with these voices of authority in our head as if, you know, we're inside these structures and how can we win at them and how do we succeed at them? And I'm curious how doing that at such a high level, seeing it lauded, seeing it as like, that is the thing that you're supposed to do. How did you learn to shift from, or maybe it's still a journey that you're in? I know like for most of us, it's not a linear thing, but like, even feeling the beginning seeds of going from like, I'm being hard on myself to I'm being kind to myself. Like when did you start to be on your own team?
Sorry, Scott, I lost you at the same time and picked you up at the same time.
That's okay. I was asking, when did you learn how to like start to transform that internal dialogue from being hard on yourself to being on your own team?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I'm still working on that. I catch myself, obviously, as with everything, good and bad days. But I would say it was a couple years after retiring, a couple years after walking away from the game. I don't think I've mentioned, but I've been helping out with the Jupiter High School baseball team now, which has been an incredible experience. My two true passions colliding. But one of the big things that I want to kind of get them to realize at an early age that would have helped me so much is that, like, as you mentioned, this sense of identity that we have of who or what we are, even aside from baseball, is not that. Like, I'm not my name, Drew. I'm not a baseball player, clearly, anymore. But even when I was, like, that's not who or what I am. I'm not this body that we see and feel, right? Like, I am simply that consciousness. And there is no greater or higher power than love. So why would I have this feeling, energy, sensation of anything other than love, not only for those around me or anyone that I come in contact with, but most importantly for myself, right? Like, I always had this love and appreciation and whatnot of others, to a sense where, like, sadly, a lot of people have the ego and they hold themselves above others. I hate to say it, but my father is one of them. But it was like the opposite, right? Like, I saw everybody else having something that I didn't have. And I saw and appreciated all these things. And then I would kind of, again, be hard on myself, come down on myself. I would seek value. The value that I found was from performing, again, a child's game. You know, like, when I look at that now, it's like, how foolish, in a sense, could I have been, you know? But again, obviously, we all learn at different phases of our lives. We all have to go through certain things in order to learn these lessons. And I think, to answer your question, that was probably a couple years after walking away from the game, still dealing with that, you know, depression. I think the easiest way to simplify it was that, rather than, like, even in my mind having this, now all of a sudden I'm not a baseball player, but I'm a depressed individual, you know, like, what an even worse label to have. Instead, I just was an individual, a man that needed some deep rest, right? And just needed to slow things down, needed to do a bit more of the inner work, needed to listen to what was going on internally, needed to tune and tap back into what truly matters on this earth, in this world, while I'm in this body. I would say that was kind of when and how that kind of fell into place, if that makes sense.
It really does. And it's that trust the reroute, you know. It's like, maybe baseball did give you something, like, it pointed you back to you. And it was like, you're knocking so hard on this door, and the door is saying, like, this isn't the door for this incarnation. It reroutes you that way and redirects the energy in this other direction. And that's painful at some level, to the degree that we're identified, I think, is the degree that we struggle and suffer. And it seems like, really, at the heart of healing is this matter of self-identity. And when we're able to do the work that shifts the core of identity, it does sometimes look funny that, like, we're like, oh, I thought fulfillment was gonna come from, like, hitting the ball over the fence, right? Like you said, like, when you're, like, it's a little kid game, like, it's really like throw ball, we're playing catch, we're hitting balls, like, and we think that, like, that's going to, like, represent the fulfilling aspect or dimension of selfhood. And, like, it's like, there's no way. But our whole society confirms that we're living in an agreement reality where, by and large, everybody can co-sign on the illusion by pretending that happiness is hitting the ball over the fence. And all of a sudden it's like, but I want to hit the ball over the fence and I'm good at hitting the ball over the fence and I can, you know, do all these things. And it's like, no, that's not it. No, that's not it. And it, like the pain of that's like a divorce. It's like divorcing the identity of who I thought I was, where I thought I was going, what I thought this life is. And all of a sudden it's like the dying of those false identities into this expansion of rebirth, right? Of something that is simultaneously feeling new, but couldn't be more ancient, or maybe in fact timeless, right? Like birthless, deathless essence of self, and how that completely reframes the experience of just being, like the awe of being, like you're saying in this moment. Like, I mean, sometimes, dude, I'll think about like it, like something to get an outside perspective, like if an alien civilization descends upon Earth and like, do they care like your job is, money, what you're like if you could really look at us from a third person neutral perspective, the things that we've made matter are fucking bullshit by and large. And you don't take it with you, you know, and you get to the end. And I always think like, what, looking back from that moment of my death, like, what will I have wanted the journey to be about? And I don't, you know, for the life of me, think it's like anything other than like, did I love fully? Did I heal? Did I grow? And did, was I of service? And did I enjoy it? Like, that's it. It's like, that's simple. And the rest of it, like, you know, other versions, other, you know, people's versions of what success or failure is, what they project upon us, to like give that back and come into our own version of that is so fucking liberating that we get to do it that, you know, in that spirit, in our own way. And I'd love to shift into that next like chapter of your journey, because I feel like your journey represents that, like it like in such beautiful ways. Like you, it's like you turned your suffering into service, and that's what inspires me. It's not, I don't look at you and be like, well, now you're successful because you, and for those, you know, I probably fell to some degree at my hosting duties of contextualizing your journey, but Drew has created the most incredible space for feeding and serving our community with nutrition, and this beautiful positive energy has created a brand called Soul Rebel. And now we understand some of the meaning behind that name, and juices and smoothies. I mean, it's not like turning lemons into lemonade. It's like turning like lemons into like an entire juice shop with that's like serving up the community. And it's, I always think of like, you know, people come in, they get what they need, they go out, they're taking that goodness with them, and you're helping people to heal. You know, a lot of the podcasts I've done recently, the last few I've recorded are about like healing from cancer and understanding Ayurveda and like working with our energetic constitutions and our relationship to food, psychologically. And like your journey broke down your body, and then you resuscitated body, energy, heart, mind, soul. And then you took what you gleaned from that experience of health and said, I'm going to give that back to my people. That, like, that to me is a success. Not like the business or like how much money it makes or doesn't make, or created this beautiful offering to community and respected and regarded and a sincere, humble human that's like achieve a lot, all that stuff's beautiful. It's like, but it's inspiring that you've taken something like painful and you've turned it into something purposeful. And if there's somebody that's in that space of like, they're in the pain, but not yet in the purpose, what would you say to them?
Yeah, thank you, brother. Thank you so much, honestly, for those kind words, but more than anything, just for getting it. A lot of people, I feel like, truly don't get it. And I'm okay with that, because that's not why I'm here. But for you to not only get it, but to acknowledge it, means more than you realize.
Thank you.
If I back up, for everybody who is listening, when we talk about like things kind of getting sidelined and going on another path, I do believe that whether it was baseball or not, right? So for whatever anyone may be going through in the moment or in the past, that wasn't obviously baseball related. I think that everything that I did learn from there definitely transferred over to the business world, personal life, everything, right? So to try and answer your question, when I moved home, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I knew baseball was no longer in the cards. I didn't really have any, up to a fault, many other true passions, things that I was into. But I did know that I wanted to come home. I wanted to work for myself. I wanted to start something of my own. Didn't know what that was going to look like, but I knew that I wanted to help others. Again, didn't know what that was going to look like. As you mentioned, turning some of that pain into purpose, for me, it was learning and realizing throughout that process how important our health is, right? Whether it is physically, whether it is mentally, emotionally, spiritually, there's all these different aspects of quote unquote health. And I think that I was fortunate enough, it's strange to say it, but fortunate enough to truly get checked into realizing and having to realize like all these different aspects of health and how important our health is. And without our health, we're not able to show up for others the way that we would like to. We're not able to feel the way that we would like to in our bodies, right? So for me, I didn't have a college background, didn't have a business degree, didn't know what I was going to do. But I did the inner work and I started to sit with my thoughts and basically connecting some dots. And before we knew it, here was this opportunity to create something special within the community. It wasn't Soul Rebel at the time. It was my first business, back in 2014, I believe, was when we started into Cuesta. But for me, it was all these different things that I was into now that baseball was in the past, like that I knew long term would bring me that joy, happiness, satisfaction, quote unquote, success. But it wasn't a matter of I'm going to start this business so I can make X amount of dollars, right? Like, to a fault, that thought never even crossed my mind. Still, no decision that I've made to this point has ever been based on that. And I wish there was a way to kind of like get people to realize that in a sense. But at the same time, like, that's kind of my ego speaking up, like, oh, I wish people would realize where I'm coming from, rather than just staying on my path and not being concerned about all that, that I can't control. Right. So the only reason I say that is because back to, you know, having pure intention and truly believing that nothing that I've accomplished would have happened without it. When I did start that first business, again, it was a lot of meditation, but manifestation, visualization, putting things down on paper. Every single thing that I wanted to happen, every single thing that I visualized, materialized. And that was another time and experience that I was like, okay, this stuff is too powerful to deny it. This works, you know, like there's no other way around it. So from there, back to the intention, it was truly to do just that, to bring something to the community that was just that communal, right? The people that were working with me, not for me, with me, it was one of my brothers and every other individual on that staff grew up with us, right? They were from the area. They played team sports or they were friends of friends that we connected with beforehand, you know, like every single person on payroll. It was incredible. And just the energy that you felt in that place, because it was very pure. But on top of that, you know, not only was it an opportunity to create a positive work environment for these individuals that at the time were kind of fresh out of college, right? They were younger, just out of college, weren't quite ready to jump into that career. So it was like, okay, let's go. You know, I'm starting this. If you'd like to be a part of it, I think you'd be a great fit, right? Like, knowing that this is it. This is the way it's meant to be. So that was a small part of it, you know, creating that positive work environment, a positive culture within the community. But more so back to the health aspect of things, it was, okay, we don't have anything like this in the community. All that there was at the time, you know, when it comes to smoothies was tropical smoothie and Jamba Juice. Not to knock anyone else or what they're doing, but there's no true integrity in those products. You know, it's a lot of fillers, sugars, sweeteners, things that, you know, not only don't help with your health, they, if anything, are kind of detrimental to our health. So,
or it's like I'm going
when it came to a sense of healthy.
Oh, sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, by design, you know. Yeah. But so it was an opportunity now to kind of subtly give these individuals, these residents, locals, expats, all the above, an opportunity to not only in a environment that I hope to be peaceful and welcoming, positive, but to get these nutrients that our bodies need in order to thrive on a day-to-day basis, no matter what it is that we're trying to accomplish. You know, even if you're sitting, not to knock anything, but if you're in a cubicle, you know, at a desk, you still need to take care of your body, right? In order to function at our highest capacity. So again, there was nothing else like it. And then at that point, there was no one doing the acai bowls, which again, are great for us, for our bodies compared to a lot of the other options out there. So then it was like, okay, we have these ingredients. No one knows what acai bowls are. We have the stuff to do juices, might as well do cold pressed juices. Again, I mean, it's pretty damn good for you. Some people believe in it, some people don't, but when you peel back the layer, it's like, how can it be bad for you? Especially on top of, again, all these other alternatives and options. What's going to be better, drinking a fresh cold pressed juice or grabbing a soda, you know? So it was just, again, a way to subtly create this platform that has these different angles of positive intention that I truly felt confident, you know, again, I had no business starting a business, had no experience, none of it. But I knew at my core, because of what the intentions were, because everything was so pure, that it was something that the universe was not going to deny. So we roll it out and it just takes off. So that kind of answers it. And then, but I would love to touch on, I know that this is kind of a side thing, but to go back to the intention and the purpose, you know, turning that pain into purpose. It's weird for me to say, and I'm trying to, like, I've never said it out loud, so I'm trying to figure the words to put it out there. But as I sit here speaking with you, the way that I could sum up what I think my greatest success is to this point is staying true to that purpose and not being distracted or blindsided to what others may see as success. As far as I have, after time of never thinking about opening a second location, I opened up another location. I helped others unknowingly open up their own location that had nothing to do with me. I then opened up more locations. However, a lot of these different opportunities came to this halt because there was no longer this synergy of what we truly cared about. Back up to my first business, that's exactly why we ended up splitting. They were into things that I was not into. I was into things that they did not care about. It led to some friction, and it was best for us to part ways. I bring that up because the same patterns to themselves. And I, rather than, again, getting kind of distracted by what others may see as success and open up as many locations as possible so I can make more money, you know, like I haven't done it. I've always, when I've had the decision to stay true to what I believe in, or to kind of sell out in a sense so I can kind of take the easy road to a fault in a business sense, I've always stayed true to what I felt to be my purpose. And as I sit here and speak with you, I think everything else aside, that's what I feel the most quote-unquote success from, is to staying true and doing what I think is not only in my best interest, but most importantly, the best interest of the community, the best interest for our team, those individuals that I work with for years now, some of them. And it feels good not only to do that, knowing kind of the negative impacts in a sense, again, when it comes to finances and this, that, and the other, but just where I am now, how I feel now, speaking it aloud to you, like, I know that I'm still on the right path, and I feel proud, not in an egotistical sense, but in a spiritual sense. Consciously, I feel proud to be where I am today and to have made those decisions. I know that I kind of went off.
No, it's beautiful.
But I hope that answers the question to an extent.
It really does, because it speaks to the friction of staying, you know, true to our path. So if we turn pain into purpose, and then there's the allure of money, really, and success in those traditional terms, you're almost back to where you were at the beginning if you were to take that temptation route, you know, and
sorry to cut you off, but and social, like with the baseball and with the business, it's kind of the same thing, you know, like these things that truly don't matter, you know, but it's almost like by design that now society believes it's all that matters, you know. Again, sorry to cut you off, but keep going.
So that temptation, because it's like it can be addicting to people because you're getting that confirmation from the external, you know, status, etc. But it's not real confirmation, it's projection. And then you're buying into it so that like it's like an ego dopamine hit to get what you think you need. And then it's like, where's the next fix? And the reality is it might look a certain way on the surface, but it's not the real thing. And when we're aligned with our purpose and we don't go those routes, there's so many invisible layers to the human experience that are more deeply confirmed by us to us. And it's why I want to talk to you today. I mean, this truly is that, like, I relate to that. I was just having this conversation with somebody last night about, like, you know, even in my journey, I've had so many of the similar things, whether it's people wanting to like buy Kula and then turn it into a franchise and me saying no to that, or it's just the projection of how somebody will see you because, oh, you're the owner of this thing or whatever. And it's like, nah, man, like I just want a place to essentially like teach yoga, heal, support healing, and like support that for our community and for other space holders to have a space to do it with autonomy as well. And like, so I recognize that in you. I've seen your journey up close. You know, I remember going into said location and feeling, I can feel the shift in what it was when, you know, not to ever, we don't ever want to throw people under the bus, you know, but like, also like you really contributed something beautiful there, and you can feel when it got packaged and repurposed, like they tried to make a product out of something that was authentically in you. Like, I'll say it so you don't have to, you know, it's like that was your energy that made that special. And then it was like, oh, we can put a package and conveniently say things that look like things that aren't those things, like say like fresh, or like when a menu says fresh or natural, it's like, but wait, like what about the organic thing? Like what's the real term? It's like this, it's like the false replicate is something real. Now, how do we brand that archetype versus be that thing? And sometimes it can fucking suck when the branded false archetype is like getting the financial reward while the real thing is sitting there just quietly going about being itself and doing its thing and trusting its process. But what you're getting is so much more fulfilling on the inside. It's like this incredible internal wealth. And it's nice when the external matches up too. So please, if you're local, go to Soul Rebel Support. I want that. That's one of the reasons why I want to do this podcast, Heal the Divide, is that like that's an unfortunate divide that exists inside our society, is that we get conditioned by the fabricated version of the authentic thing. And it's like to get to support the real thing is like it's an honor to, you know, it's an honor to get to do that. And so, you know, and I think the people that are doing it recognize the frequency of it when they see it. You know, it's like, and it's that deep bow of like, I know that's authentic. I feel it. I know the frequency of it and I feel it and I can tell the difference. I can taste the difference and the energy that goes into our bodies when we consume something that's made from that frequency genuinely supports our healing. And I went through a similar thing that I'm like in a similar like, oh, kind of boat, which I've shared with you personally before. And it's like, I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to throw anyone under the bus and there's stuff. And you don't want to like insert drama into a community. You know, you're here to heal. You're here to serve. And sometimes it's like there's this negative repercussive feedback that comes back on you, you know, around something and it's not true. And you don't even want to engage it. So you just like let it have its course. And sometimes that's to a like negative, you know, outcome financially speaking. And you're not, it's not to like martyr yourself or anything, but it is to say like, it's going to be a clear inflection point for me. I'm either going to engage this energy and like dance with it and be in it. I'm going to like do it, you know, whether that's to make someone else look a certain way. And then, you know, and you get into all like the politics of it. It's like, you can feel the frequency of that. It's like, that's not why I'm doing this. Like, it's like my higher self is saying just like, no matter what anybody's doing, everybody's doing the best they can with the tools that they have based on the consciousness that they're operating from. And if they're doing things it behind the scenes that are hurtful, are out of integrity, that's their karma to work through. Like, you know, like made like blessings to your journey. And like, I'm going to live mine in my way and like, let the chips fall where they may. And I feel like I've gone through like some like serious fucking rebirths inside of rebirths. In fact, where as we record now, today is the day that we're opening Kula, and we have our big opening in a few hours. And I was like, how cool is it? First off, that I'm like, I'm not going to let it undertow me. I'm still going to record a podcast and I'm doing it with you. And like, I know, you know, that feeling and the different versions. And it's like to get to shake off all those stories and just be like, get so quiet and present with your purpose that you just do it and you offer it up in service and the outcome is none of your business, is the most profoundly fucking liberating feeling that there is. And then, you know, to feel that this coalescence around that, because we are waking up as people and we do recognize that and we do crave that. And you used the word pure before. And I think that's such a powerful word that you inserted into the conversation, because when we can align with that pure intention, it might not be on the same timeline as the, you know, prefabricated model version to scale, but it's like, man, it's the richest part of life. It's not just about like breadth of scale, but depth of soul. And I'll take that any day, you know, over, you know, skimming the surface. And so I have so much props for you for the way you've been doing it. And I want to shift gears yet again, because you You've mentioned in your bio that psychedelics were helpful. Meditation was helpful. You shared that you'd done some yoga. So for people that might be tuning in and curious about some of these different modalities, you're here running a business, working on yourself at the same time. I call it intrapreneurship. It's like the internal aspects of entrepreneurship. I wanted to just kind of throw that out for the entrepreneurs that are tuning in. And I guess in a way, we're all the entrepreneurs of life, right? We're all creating from the unmanifest into the manifest constantly. I'm curious about your journey with psychedelics specifically and how they've helped you heal and rewire, as you said.
First, if we're able to back up real quick, then I'll answer that. I just want to, again, let you know how proud I am of you. With the reopening of Kula, but not only that, what you've created, what you've continued to facilitate. I don't know if I've ever put it in these words, but something that I have kind of realized while I've continued to do the inner work is that, you know, those mind, body, breath classes that I used to make it to pretty regularly and just being in that space and in that energy, like you kind of saved my life in a sense, or at least the direction, you know? Super proud of you, super powerful. I think it's amazing what you've done for the community and can't stress that enough.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
when it comes to the psychedelics, as you mentioned, you know, big difference between recreational use and as a form of therapy or to emphasize or dig deeper into the inner work. I've done a bit of both. I think that I have, as you mentioned, a whole lot more from when there was actual purpose behind it. And nowadays, it seems like that's kind of more of what I'm into with good reason. But yeah, from psilocybin, LSD, DMT, ayahuasca, ketamine, they have literally change the way that I see everything, the way that I think about everything, the way that I feel everything. I think the biggest thing has been, so with like, more specifically with ketamine, what I was able to pull from that, and again, it's in a therapeutical setting, but what I was able to pull from that more than anything is kind of how we discussed earlier, as far as like, we are not this body. We are not our thoughts. We are not these labels or these expectations or these projections that we believe that we are, you know, we truly are just pure consciousness. And through that, I was able to, as wild as it sounds, remove myself from my body, become the witness of my body, of my thoughts. And that's kind of when it truly all began to make sense. Like, okay, this is it, right? Like, we are, before we even have the opportunity to think for ourselves, we're kind of hardwired a specific way. And I think that it is through truly all these different psychedelic usages and purposes that have done just that in rewiring my mind, ayahuasca in the same, you know, the ability to, without effort, just sit, right? Just sitting there and being projected without any thought, effort, anything specific, not even too much intention, right? Just the medicine transporting us to these childhood traumas that we didn't even necessarily realize were traumatic experiences, reliving the experience through a completely different, almost set of eyes and from a completely different perspective, that then you're able to realize like, okay, that now makes sense. And then from that, the acceptance of that experience that, again, we really don't even have any understanding or belief that it had that much of an impact on us, it then is able to connect so many different dots that lead to where we are currently, but also the things that we have felt to date, right? So the depressions and all these different things and emotions and feelings that start to almost make sense a bit more. To whereas beforehand, it's like, at least for me personally, I can only speak from my personal experiences. When I had in the past felt, you know, the depression, these specific emotions or thoughts that, again, were kind of beating myself down, it doesn't make sense, you know, and you almost have that thought of like, why am I feeling this way and nobody else is, right? And why am I triggered when something happens to when it just sends me down kind of this negative loophole of emotions, you know? And it just really made sense of a lot of different things. Even going back to my relationship with my dad, my experience with ayahuasca was the thing that kind of triggered us kind of rekindling that relationship that we had and changed the way that I subconsciously looked at him and almost at his ways. You know, as you mentioned before, we are all just individuals, just pure consciousness, trying our best to do what we can in this moment with what we have to offer, right? So, as I mentioned, he hasn't necessarily done much of the inner work. He, as with all of us, was hardwired a certain way, and that's all that he knew. So who am I to judge the way that he handles our relationship or the way that he was with myself and my siblings or my mother, you know? Whereas I almost held a bit of internal resentment, you know? How could you treat my mom that way? How could you be so hard on all of us and never, like, truly show us that unconditional love? Like, how dare you, in a sense, you know? When in reality, it's like, okay, I get it. You know, it's not like he was doing it to punish us. It's not like he was doing it to try and place this fear within us. Unfortunately, that's what ended up happening, but it wasn't his intention, you know, like he literally was doing the best that he could. He literally loves us to death. He just didn't necessarily know how to go about that or to show that correct way. Or he still is dealing with his own internal demons, as we all are. He just hasn't necessarily dealt with them or faced them head on, right? He just consumes and numbs himself, right? So that was another huge thing. So I don't want to necessarily get into every specific experience, but to answer the question, when it comes to psychedelics, like it truly has rewired my mind. It has the ability, it is medicine, especially ayahuasca, and especially even ketamine, you know, the others as well. You know, if with the proper purpose and, as you mentioned, the setting and the frame of mind and what the intention is, like all these things are so powerful. It's very easy, as with anything, to abuse it and to not, you know, use them for the proper purpose. But I think, and I'm so excited to see how it is becoming a bit more accepted, how there is all this scientific research going into it, all this therapeutic research going into it, because as my experience and time in your space and in your energy, has saved my life, I'm willing to say the same with psychedelics, you know, in a sense that it changed. It's not a matter of like wanting to end things, but it's a matter of like, finally feeling this love and joy and acceptance that for the life of me, I just did not have, even when things were going good, because it was never in my mind good enough, because in my mind, it wasn't good enough for, more specifically, my father, you know? So it's just been incredible. I mean, not only is it mind-opening and mind-blowing at times, and just so enjoyable, and just this sensation of euphoria and nirvana and all these things that, like, I truly feel that we, even subconsciously as individuals, are kind of striving and searching for, you know, that when we're able to consume these different medicines, again, the proper setting and attention, just how powerful they truly are, and how, you know, I can't say it really any other way than rewiring the way that we see, feel, just everything around us, appreciate, you know, tapping back into what truly matters, and almost being able to filter through all the bullshit. And sadly, these days, there is so much bullshit out there, you know? So I think that that is what I've kind of been able to take most from, you know, these different psychedelic experiences.
Yeah, it's like this capacity to pierce through the veil of the illusion to see what is the deeper structure of reality and our place within it, and that recontextualizes identity, purpose, and alignment. And I'm curious to, you know, as it comes to your journey, whether it's been through baseball, through romantic relationship, through business, through different business endeavors. It seems like the part of the common thread has been like, I'm moving in this direction, and then it's like, oh wait, it's like it turns and redirects. And I wonder, like, how it, like, the introduction of these inner work tools has altered your relationship to the future. Like, are you, when you look forward now, how do you dance that razor's edge between, like, I'm so, like, consumed by creating an identity of, like, I'm trying to get somewhere, which is so, you know, really, like, force-fed when it comes to things like business, and you have a business plan, and you're, and you go through these steps, and this is what we're trying to achieve, to this, where in, like, psychedelics, it's like, it's opening you, it's like this shift in experience from, like, it's not about achieving, it's about receiving. And in receiving, there's still growth and new things unfolding. But wow, what a way to, like, lift the hands off the steering wheel and stop the white knuckling and trust. And still, I guess where I'm trying to go is, like, the idea of, like, controlling future outcome to like accepting is like a neutralizing, but then shifting from the neutral to the, like, I'm so grateful that I don't know, because then I get to unwrap the mystery in through synchronicities and serendipities and, you know, these chance encounters and these beautiful blessings. And, like, I'd rather not know. I don't want to know how the story ends. I want to live the unfoldment. And I wonder if that's, I'm maybe projecting or just sharing, that's been my journey. And it's not a clean break from those patterns, will, especially when the proper triggers there, will, like, revert back to that. But, you know, it's funny. I was making a coffee a few hours ago, and I was in that house by myself, Drew. And I said, I'm not trying to get anywhere anymore. Like, I said it, I just came out of my mouth, and I just stopped, and I, like, took a breath in my house, and, like, to get off that, those tracks and be like, I'm here for it. Right. Like, I'm here for life. And like, I just wonder how that, like, journey is for you, for someone else that's, like, doing these inner work practices and still working on creating a business at the same time. It's like a high risk endeavor to be like, I'm going to really be working on surrendering attachment to outcome. Wow. I'm an entrepreneur and people are working for me and like people I care about. And it's like, wow, man, you're really going to that line. I wonder how you surf that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with everything that you just mentioned, especially just the fact that it does impact and affect every aspect of life, you know, relationships, baseball, now business. But I think the best way that I could put it for me specifically is that I have 100% always been too, like you mentioned, okay, I have this end goal, no matter what it is. What do I have to do to achieve it? And making it happen. And in that process, missing all of it, right? Like not enjoying any of it, not appreciating any of it, not being at peace mentally. So now where I've been at more recently, and which is why I truly believe that I am in this place of peace, just inner peace and joy, is that I have, as you mentioned, basically let go of the steering wheel. Obviously, there are certain things that I would love to see happen. You know, I still meditate on things. I still visualize certain things. But truthfully, I think that the easiest way to put it is I've become much less specific about it, much less result-oriented with everything. There's just so many things that are out of our control as individuals, right? We can only control so much. And I, in the past, have been so just kind of battled with that and fought that because of what I wanted to accomplish, right? So now where I'm at with it is, again, just kind of surrendering to what will be, knowing to an extent what I would like that to be, but more so than anything, like kind of peeling back the layers and becoming more vague that I don't need this, that, and the other to happen in order for me to be happy. What I want and what that end goal is that happiness, is that inner peace, is that joy that I feel as I sit here today. And I think that in doing so and surrendering to these end goals, puts me, catapults me into this moment, as I mentioned, is all that matters. And then as I'm in this moment, I'm able to make better decisions when things do arise, right? When certain opportunities do present themselves, I'm able to make a better decision from a better place that will in turn put me naturally, the universe is going to put me exactly where I'm meant to be anyways. So who am I to sit here and try to force it or guide it? You know, like I'm just now surrendering and allowing myself to be guided, whichever way that may be, you know, and enjoying every aspect of it, the highs, the lows, you know, like you said, just kind of riding that wave, surfing that wave. And that I think is one of the most important things that we as individuals can do in life, you know, because like I said, we can only control so much. And it's almost like, at least through my experience, the more that we want to control something or hold on to something or not be ready to let something go, that's when we get reeled back into that negative state, that darkness in a sense, or that sense of control or attachment, you know, when in reality, it's like, okay, just let live, you know, let love be free, you know, and in turn, everything, at least to this point, has fallen into place, has brought me to a better place mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally that I ever thought was possible. Like, I can't emphasize, man, this thing called life has been a fucking struggle for me. When things were up, when things were down, it's been tough by my own doing, not because of what others are doing to me or what the universe is presenting to me. It's how I was perceiving these things, how I was reacting to these things. And now I'm able to, through more than obviously the psychedelics are a huge help, but through all of these things that are the inner work, I'm able to realize. And I have learned the hard way. It's like hitting my head up against the wall for years. And now it's finally, okay, it's time to let go of all these different things that we've discussed. And it's time to trust the universe and trust everything that's happening and trust that where we are right now, where I am right this moment, where you are right this moment, where my neighbor in this little apartment that I'm in right now in this moment, we are all exactly where we're designed to be. And it's up to us to find that happiness, that joy, that sense of fulfillment where we are. Because no one else is going to give it to us, that's for damn sure. No other individual is going to make us feel whole. No one else can make us feel accomplished or fulfilled or at peace or in love with ourselves other than ourselves, you know, or anything else as well. So just incredible. And sorry for going on a tangent, but that's just one that's been like, I'm super passionate about now. And I'm even like, every book that I read now, the majority of the podcasts that I listen to, I'm just trying to like self-educate myself more and more, because now that I've gotten a little glimpse of it and I feel this massive difference internally, and yeah, I'm not struggling myself all the time. Like, I just want to, learn more. And I want to be able to pass that on, you know, even if it is subtly, but to help everybody. Man, and this is, I'll end it here as far as this topic. But one of the things that I would like to get across is that as I've been dealing with my own stuff, it was a huge eye-opening experience coming home. I was living up in New York City for a couple years, coming home, working during the holidays in the shop. And these high school kids were openly speaking about how they were seeing a therapist, which I thought was super cool. One, that they were like kind of proud of it, because growing up, that was like, if you're exactly, you know. So I took two things from it. One was like that sense of pride for them, not pride in an egotistical sense, but just like happy for them, right? But then also it was like this light bulb went off of, oh shit, like, again, I thought I was the only one struggling this way, but for these individuals at such a young age to be struggling already before even really stepping into the real world, it started to make me realize, like, okay, this is an issue, a problem. So my point being is that, like, with these high school kids that I'm coaching, with the baseball team, with these individuals that I work with at the shop, like, my mission, my purpose and my passion is not only, like, working on myself, but in doing so, now that I'm able to feel a certain way and I have picked up these tools, a lot of them coming from you, is to try and like pay it forward and to not force anything upon anybody, but just to get them to realize that there are other options, there are other ways to handle certain things, and things will get better. You know, I to sum it up, like, something that when I meditate, something that I repeat to myself at the end of every meditation is continue to generate sustained happiness, continue to travel the world, and continue to help others do the same. And that's exactly what I want to continue to try to make happen, not for myself, for these other individuals, because I know what it feels like. I know how much that hurts. I know the pain and the struggle that we as individuals go through. And I don't want anybody else to feel that way, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at with it now.
Thank you so much. And it's interesting in the pay it forward, it's almost like a be it forward or something. Like, just by you being who you are and the organic results of the things that you're doing to love yourself and to heal and to nurture and take care of yourself. And it's like it oozes out, and it's felt in things like the energy of like looking in someone's eyes or hearing the tone in their voice and their body language. And it's all these subtle spaces that we can feel this felt sense of resonance that rubs off. It's as if that feeling, that energy, because it's the core of the truth, and that's what you're uncovering. It's like the shared root of all of us. So it's already in all of us. So just by one of us being in that, it's like it ignites it. It's like a fire logs next to each other, and one of them goes to that core fire, and all of a sudden it brings fire out of all these other logs. And so there's this sort of virality inside of truth. And when we're resonating at that frequency, just by being ourselves, we're sending that transmission out, and it like catches and it goes. And I think we're in an incredible moment of human existence right now, where we are seeing a lot of archaic structures of consciousness really, it's like they're getting loud. It's like if you look at the microcosm of like the ego screams before it, like it loses the core of identity. We're gonna like hold on the tightest, or you go into like an ayahuasca ceremony, and it's like the like agony precedes the bliss, and it's hard to understand sometimes when we're in these collective moments of so much suffering in the world. But it is fascinating that while that intensity spikes to these wars and that mindset, that we're also starting to see, you know, at least one, in my view, presidential candidate speak a different language from a different frequency than we've seen. We're seeing like acceptance of these medicines come into the mainstream. We're seeing, like you said, teenagers talk openly about their therapeutic journey. We're seeing businesses like ours that are choosing purpose over profit sometimes, and staying true to that, and like trust and what it takes to do that, and choosing to support each other. We're seeing podcasts come out where it's like, wow, long form conversations about substantive life journeys can now be shared, and everything that we've been hiding inside of ourselves is like, oh fuck, man, you too, wow, that's awesome. And then we're seeing these individual stars light up, then they connect with each other, and they become these constellation grids. And I just see there's this through, just like your journey, the challenge provided the necessary chrysalis in order for this emergent property to come into its next iteration, and we're incarnating, it seems, individually but collectively, in service of that chrysalis moment. And so it can feel like a struggle, and it can feel like liberation, and we're doing it in service for this entire collective generational evolution of consciousness. And that somehow makes when we're in the struggle part, to know we're doing it in service for the whole, that changes it, and it becomes like an honor, and it's beautiful. And then, you know, when we come out on the other side of that in those moments, and we can have conversations like this and ignite hope in people and relate, and not do it in a fucking preachy, I've got it all figured out kind of way, but like, yeah, man, I get you. I'm in it with you too. And I've gone through it, and I still go through it. And it sometimes tastes the other side of it. And I'm willing to talk about all of it and not pretend behind an image of any of it, and just be, and we can all exhale together and be human together, and cry together, and be in joy together. And, you know, like that, what's more beautiful than an authentic human existence lived to the fullest in every which way, and sharing that with one another? That's it.
I love it.
Yeah. Me too. I love you, bro. Thank you for doing this today.
I love it. Appreciate you. Always will.
Yeah, same. Well, this feels like a good wrap-up moment. Thank you for saying yes to this invitation, and I look forward to the mystery continuing to unfold itself, and keeping an eye on your journey, and supporting whatever comes through you, and sharing it, And I thank you for being you and turning everything that you have moved through into offerings for of service and health for other people. It's a beautiful and inspiring mission that you're on, and you're doing a great job. And I hope this podcast touches whatever lives are meant to be touched by this message.
100%. I appreciate you, man. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for everything that you do. I love you, man.
Love you too. And for everybody that has tuned in, thank you for checking out this conversation, for hanging out with Drew and I. Free flow. We had no notes for this one, no questions planned, just a whole lot of trust. Now I get it. Now I know the why, because I usually have some structured talking points and questions, and something kept telling me to leave it alone. And now I get that the theme emerged, which was we don't need to overplan our lives, that it's that we're fundamentally secure enough to trust the unfoldment. So may that be the message that reaches us all. And until next time, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you.